It's the Martha Bassett Show podcast, coming to you from the historic Reeves Theater in Elkin, North Carolina, a home for music in the heart of the foothills. The Martha Bassett Show features emerging national artists, fresh local faces, and me, Martha Bassett. You can keep up to date on our entire schedule at MarthaBassettShow.com. I hope you enjoy the show.
Want to feel good, to feel fine. Won't be feeling nothing when you run it three times. Spend all my money on fine red wine. Never spend a dime on moonshine. Thick as blood.
Welcome to the Martha Bassett Show podcast. I am Martha Bassett, and sitting here with me is Pat Lawrence.
Hi there. Fun show last time, Amethyst Kia and Riley Bogus.
It was a blast. I think, which show was it, the eighth?
The eighth show of the season.
Yeah, eighth show of our first season, and I finally just felt really relaxed, and I think we're getting the hang of it.
We're getting more of the hang of it. We've been having fun from the beginning, but...
We have, but this was... The flow seemed so much easier, and I don't know. I was just more relaxed.
You were, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm getting the hang
of it.
We
inspired dancing, I think, for the first time. Spontaneous dancing.
There were dancing people down front.
Yes, that was very good.
I don't know. All of our guests have been really easy to work with, but I felt like Amethyst was... just super easy to collaborate with, and so was Riley Bogus. I've worked with him many times before, and I knew that he was going to be a delight and a very easy person to work with. And I had just met Amethyst the day of the show, and what a great singer.
Oh, yeah, phenomenal. I mean, there was tons of talent on that show.
Yeah, yeah, Riley's a great singer, too. That's one of the goals that we had when we first envisioned this show. We wanted to not only focus on great songwriters, which we have done, but also some really great singers. And Amethyst was just, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I see her going great places.
And she was great to talk to, too.
Yeah,
so hopefully we'll share that conversation. Her dad, Carl, was there, too. Uh-huh. He travels with her. It was awesome to meet him. And all the collaborations were fun. Riley, I mean, I knew he was a good storyteller / joke teller, but he is insanely entertaining.
He had the audience in the palm of his hand. It was just beautiful to watch. So,
no, it was great.
Go Riley Bogus.
So the eighth show, we survived it. I think it's not so much the artists. I think we're actually getting more comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's it too.
It's the first one I didn't wear my adult undergarment on.
Do you really want to say that on the podcast, Mr. Pat?
No, we're kind of getting the hang of it. But yeah, we are doing a season two. We've kind of announcing that. And
hallelujah. But I know. You never know how these things are going to work out, but we're getting great audiences, great support. The shows have just had amazing support from the community. People are traveling to see them. Thank you, all of you people who have come to the live shows. And if you're listening from far away, think about making a trip. The hotels in Elkin will give you a discount if you come to our show. So that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And we would love to know if you're coming from far away.
Well, on this podcast, we are going to share with you a conversation we had with Ben Solee before the show. And we'll come out the other side and we'll chat a little bit more. Anything else you want to say?
Well, we had so much fun in this conversation with Ben that we kind of ran close to showtime because the conversation was so interesting.
It was a wonderful conversation. Yeah, it was a great conversation.
We also had a video crew for this show, and they videoed the conversation and the show.
And the show, yeah.
So hopefully at some point we will be able to... share that with you as well.
Yeah. You'll hear them chatting in the background a little bit at the beginning. So that's what that sound is. And we hope you enjoy it. And
so what are you going to play first, Pat?
We're diving right into the interview.
All right.
We segue.
All right.
There's music. As we're talking, there's music rising up, and then it's going to switch into the sounds of Ben Solis. So here it is.
Beautiful.
Say ta-da or something.
Ta-da. We first saw you at the Leaf Festival. I was playing the dance stage, and we were camping.
With your swing band, you were playing the dance stage?
Cool. Yeah.
And man, you sound really good after 3 hours of swing music.
Oh, yeah. Acoustic music, please. Because, you know. We were just totally drawn to you, and it was just you alone, and you just play these nice songs, and you were so funky with the cello, and it was just mind-bending.
It's cool. This is a town I've not been to, but ironically, last night in Nashville, I mentioned to some musician friends of mine, they're like, so where are you off to next? I'm like, Elkin, North Carolina? And they're like, no shit. I have family in Elkin. And
really?
It seemed like there was this, and then evidently a bunch of friends that have hiked the Appalachian Trail too have swung through here, and they really like it.
This is a really cool little town.
Yeah.
And it's on the rise. It was a big textile place, and then the market fell out from under them, and it's turning into this great art spot. We talked about it before, but I was surprised that Ben is from Lexington. I knew he was from Kentucky.
Oh, but, Lexington. Wow, okay.
Yeah. We just did a tour there, a little micro tour. We played at Red Barn Radio, and we played at a drive-through liquor store in Lexington. I don't remember the name of it. Do you have any idea where we're talking about?
Like a pop-up play drive-through liquor store?
No,
it was in a strip mall. But it was like the end of a strip mall, and then they had the window on the far end of the building, and
so you could drive up and while we were on stage playing, you'd hear the ding of people driving
pulling up
through
to the window.
But wait, what was this venue? What's it called?
I forget. It was a good gig.
Either.
The place was packed. They do a lot of music, and the woman who owns it is, what was her name? She is
Mama Sue.
Why did you tell me like this?
Because.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll get people in trouble. Anyways, enough talking. Yeah. Drive through liquor store gigs.
And then we headed down to Knoxville to do WDBX.
Cool. So, did you swing by Woodsongs at all while you were in Lexington?
We did not.
Have you been to Woodsongs before?
I have not.
No.
I've listened, and I'm very aware of it, but I've never.
It'd be a good thing to go see because they do it with an all volunteer crew.
Huh.
So I grew up on that show.
Yeah, because you started there, right? You got in the house band when you were real young, right?
Exactly. So I came through with playing some of my songs when I was, just nearly 17. Mm-hmm. And Michael Jonathan asked me if I wanted to join his band, which came to be known as the Folk Boy Orchestra.
Yeah.
and I ended up playing and on some 200 or so broadcasts of the show.
Wow, that's
over
great.
Over the following 4 years. And it was really an amazing experience. I always say, if you wanted to be a riverboat captain, you go hang out by the boats in the river. If you wanted to be a artist, you go hang out at the... Or a graffiti artist, you go hang out with all those dudes by the railroad tracks, painting trains. For me, I wanted to be a musician. And so hanging out there was amazing because we had two artists every week that were coming through. And not only was I there on stage with them, watching them perform, which is its own sort of education, but also backstage chatting with them and asking them questions and sometimes just listening. That was the best answers for things. And I got to share the stage with Odetta and Ralph Stanley and, a young Chris Thiele and Edgar Meyer and Beto Fleck and all these folks. And I really learned a lot, and it still influences my decisions and certainly influenced my decisions as an artist to remain independent over the years and own my own catalog of music. That wouldn't have happened if I hadn't heard the stories from Roger McGuinn about all the stuff that he went through. And I think that it's hard to measure how much of an impact that had on me. So it's fun to go back there and perform for the family sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But Woodsongs, amazing program that's now gone on for 700 broadcasts.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Wow.
Every week.
We do once a month, and we know what a production that is. So your folks are still there?
In Lexington?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my dad lives in Lexington. My mom lives in Frankfurt.
Okay.
And
I have friends in Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah. Lots Everybody has friends in Frankfurt. It's the center of the known universe.
You don't know the Penn family, do you, Stephen?
I sure
Penn? Do. Ah, Stephen was my best friend in college.
I told
and
you,
Laura
it's the center of the
I,
universe.
We roomed together at Shakertown.
If we were all, as humans, quarters and you dropped us. And it was, the world was like one of those big gravity wells, like you see at the science centers.
Yeah.
All of us would slowly start rolling towards the center, which would be Frankfort, Kentucky. Yeah.
I love
where
Frankfort.
You drop out of the hole is Frankfort, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's there. What's strange is when you're rolling around in the universe and Frankfort just shows up.
Yeah, you
like,
just blew
hey,
my mind.
Frankfort, Kentucky. Whoa.
Of course you know the Pens. They're musicians. Yeah. And wow.
Yeah, Kentucky's a good place to be from. It's kind of a crossroads in many ways. I don't know what your experience was there.
It was all classical music all the time, and that was my path, and I didn't expect to be off of that path. But that is where I learned about shaker music, and that has been a thread that... followed me to North Carolina.
So what blew you off the path of doing classical music?
Living in North Carolina, there was plenty of music to be made, but it was really hard to make a living. I ended up teaching more than performing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of fell into a swing band in the 90s by accident, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it was immediate. I was able to pay my bills. I had such connection with the audience, and I was working all the time, and I loved working all the time.
Yeah.
And in classical music, you know, you're just, you rehearse, 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 one performance. Then you throw that music out, you start all over, rehearse, 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 one performance.
And for us as classical musicians, we know how special that is. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't show up and be present in the audience for that show, you're never going to see that again.
Exactly.
And of course, on the flip side of that, where you can make more money is learning and putting together a really banging set and taking that around the country and playing it over and over again.
Right.
So it's, you know, you have to have a little bit higher tolerance for repetition in the world that you and I have headed towards here. But sometimes I look back at my classical time and I'm like, huh, that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I still play classical events here and there, but not very much.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. The occasional wedding or funeral. Or
well, in the social world around classical music is so different.
Yes, it is.
You know, there's always a sizing up that's happening. And I find that in folk music, there's always not always, because there are certainly those, you know, folk events with lots of beardy weirdies that are just like, you don't really know that version
right.
of that song.
The purists.
The purist, yes. But for the most part, I find that people want to hear your voice in folk music and not necessarily see or hear your chops.
Exactly.
And
it's more about your soulfulness.
Classical's so choppy.
Mm-hmm.
Super chops.
Yeah. And it can be that way, like in bluegrass too.
It just
depends on the circle that you're in.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure the same is true of classical music. I'm sure there's groups of people that get together and just read through string quartets or whatever together and have a good time and drink lots of wine. But
it happens.
A little bit harder to find.
Wow. Well, that's one of the things about this show, that I don't have to have quite as much repetition. It's a lot more work to get ready every month, but there's
it's
a lot more
like classical music like that.
Yeah, a lot more diversity in the music that we're making. And so it's always like putting on your comfortable shoes when the band has, you know, a concert, which we've got in a couple of weeks, at a local venue, and we're just playing our music.
How do you find balancing the family life with the travel? Is that something that you take too easily?
I don't balance.
Different people have different feelings on that.
I think that the analogy of balance between the road and family, I think, is maybe I like the analogy of juggling a little bit more. Because you're throwing one thing up in the air so that you can deal with the other two things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a certain astronaut quality to it. You know, when you first come on the road after a long stint with the family, the road feels a little bit, you know, wild and kind of unruly. And then when I first come back home after being on the road for a while, there's an adjustment period where I need to be back in the atmosphere of the family and not try to assert the pace or rules of the road onto the family. Mm-hmm. So that dichotomy is a little bit tricky. But certainly when I zoom out and think about the time, energy, and resources that it takes to be a touring musician these days and weigh that against, you know, family, sustainability, and the environment, personal health, and all that stuff, the road is starting to look a little less appealing.
Sure.
Because I spent a lot of time on stage talking about, you know, environmental issues and being an advocate for, you know, any number of livability issues stuff. I talk a lot about nature and I talk a lot about family and community and bicycles, all things that I have very little time to actually do and enjoy in my life, because cramming touring between also doing a lot of scoring, I do a lot of film scoring, and then home and being a present father, because I feel like family is a big part of my artistic output. You know, my family is my art in a way. That there's just, there's very little time to really take care of yourself. And at 34, you know, I'm popping my head up and looking around and I'm seeing other folks that are my age that are maybe like, they're a little healthier than I am. They're maybe even cleaner. I think they have more money than I do too. And that kind of gives me a little bit of pause, because I've seen and done some amazing things that I wouldn't trade at all. But it also lets me know that, okay, maybe it's time, with all of those things taken in together, to invest in something other than the hustle of the road. And maybe make that a little more of a side hustle as opposed to my main hustle. Maybe.
The Martha Bassett Show is supported in part by Explore Elkin, your one-stop travel source for the Yadkin Valley and beyond. Whether it's music, wineries, festivals, great restaurants, or hiking, let Explore Elkin help you find your trail. Learn more at Facebook, Explore Elkin, and also at visittheyadkinvalley.com.
I know one thing I want to ask. We had a funny dovetail. So do you know Jim White? He was on our show recently.
Totally.
Jim started, he's a big fan of Lonnie Hollies.
Of course.
Yeah, and I guess you're in his band, right? Or you've played with him a good bit?
I've played a lot with Lonnie Holly for years.
He did this crazy Lonnie Holly, like, imitation, like, rant. It was really good.
It was glorious.
And then it was really funny, because I didn't actually know that you had been in Lonnie's band. And that, and then I read that, and I was like, that is a crazy dovetail. But that must be really interesting to work with him.
Yeah.
He's like a stream of consciousness, pretty much. You just go wherever he goes, right?
Yeah, certainly. You, from note one, you're not quite sure what... Even before note one, you just don't know what key, what tempo, what spiritual place you're heading to. I always like to compare it to a guided meditation. Playing with Lonnie is like, you know, having a really great, thoughtful person to give you a guided meditation. It's just that often you're also making sound and contributing to it, and so it's a sometimes it can be a little call and responsey. Sometimes it can be a little free jazzy. Sometimes it can be a little kind of spectral and noise music. But always it's pinned to Lonnie's words. And Lonnie's real performance is not in, with any musical prowess or even any wordsmithing, although he makes up a lot of amazing words. It's really, he's improvising with his brain. So he's kind of, he talks a lot about the mother universe and cold titty mama, computer technology management, all these different things. I'm sure Jim brought all these up in his
He's talking about little green men.
Oh yeah. So, so Lonnie is basically feels like he's kind of connecting his brain up to mother universe and, you know, what, whatever comes out.
Right.
It has a Sun Ra-esque quality.
Yeah, total
to
Sun Ra vibe. That's awesome. How did you land? How did you like get connected? Did you just do a mutual show? And are you, how did it work out?
So there is a place in Atlanta called The Grocery on Home that is run by a fellow named Matt Arnett, who way back when, the very beginning of my solo career, put me up at his house in Atlanta when the homestay fell through. And we ended up staying all night talking about, you know, art of the South and music of the South, and became pretty good friends. And when he bought an old grocery in Grant Park of Atlanta, he kind of had the first floor as an open sort of concept, real rough space, and then he would live upstairs. And he wanted to have music, so he called me up and he's like, hey, you want to bring your cello down? I'll invite some people over and we'll play some music. And the first time we did it, we had, you know, 12 or 13 people there. And then he's since built that over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so into this thing, the Grocery Round Home, that artists from all over the world come to play, including Jim White. And in that process, Lonnie, who's really a visual artist, he's known around the world for his visual art. He's kind of part of this Black Souls Grown Deep art movement that really came to life in, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. And he just started making music. And it was very much like he would make his art. His art is made out of found objects. He would get on a piano and he would just start kind of almost like he was painting, but only on the black keys. So he only played the black keys. And it was this kind of free consciousness thing. He'd always done it. He's always making music and whistling and humming to himself. It just was formalized by putting him on a stage. And that's where he first performed, was at the Grocery. And since then, he's gone on to perform all over the world and is now about ready to have a record put out with Daniel Lanois.
Yeah. I kind of heard that was going to, that's crazy.
Yeah. You know, but I'm working on my own audio documentary of him
called
Hollywood.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So I've been interviewing him for the last 4 years.
Wow.
And all the various artists that he has worked with, his contemporaries and so on.
Wow, that's awesome.
Eventually I'll get to it.
Yeah.
The Martha Bassett Show is supported in part by the Elkin Funds of the Winston-Salem Foundation.
And remember, folks, if you like the Martha Bassett Show podcast, please take the time to rate or review it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, so we do these music tours by bicycle.
Yeah.
We call them Ditch the Van tours. Mm-hmm. And the genesis was that it was a response to all the crazy touring by plane and train and automobiles that I was doing. You know, flying back and forth across the country 3-4 times a week sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I found that I was losing track of where I was sometimes, just because you're not really sleeping, and really you're essentially time traveling, moving that fast. And that's not why I got into music. I got into music to, you know, be places and see things and interact with people. And I found that that wasn't really happening. And so I was looking for a way to change that when I saw a commercial on what was then Current TV, Al Gore's TV station. For an extra cycle, which is an extended frame cargo bicycle. And immediately thought, man, I could fit my cello on that. And called up the company and told them that I wanted to do a music tour by bicycle, and I wanted to do it from my hometown, Lexington, Kentucky, down to Bonnaroo Music Festival in Tennessee. And they said, sure, we'll send you a bike. Let's see what happens. And it was 330 miles in July, so it was pretty hot. It was over this little thing called the Highland Plateau, which turns out is a climb and then a fall and a climb again through river valleys. I learned a lot about myself and I learned a lot about bicycling, but the net positive was that I really found that I enjoyed the pace of riding by bicycle, which is to say I liked the boundaries, because there wasn't a way for my manager or booking agent to call and say, hey, we've got an opportunity for you to show up at this radio station first thing in the morning. You know, can you do it? I know it's a 6-hour drive from Chicago, but can you be there? And of course, if you've got the tour van and a crew, like you say yes because it's promotion and that's what you're out there to do. But if you're on a bicycle, it's an easy no. And I loved that. And I feel like that's a little micro story for where we are as humans right now, like with this much connectivity in the world and this many options for transportation and this many ideas about, physical and virtual awareness of events happening around the world. Where do you draw the line on what is sustainable or reasonable or healthy or even possible? And I think that's hard to draw. It's hard to draw. Like, when is it time to just sit there and be bored in a place and look out the window? Because the always on, always accessible human is not a natural human. So are we evolving? Are we de-evolving? I'm not sure. But for me, I find that having boundaries like a bicycle or like a book or like a specific set of tools for a, a gardening job really, really helps me slow down and helps me be at a more human pace rather than an industrial or even like digital revolution right. pace. Because, I mean, we live fast these days as humans.
And it's amazing how it wants you to live fast. It really tries to, you have to really not fight against it, but isn't it amazing? It's like a magnet. It wants you to get into that speed and that pace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading that. Questlove has that book on creativity he just mm-hmm. put out.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said something that really reminded me, you know how when you know something and then you're just reminded about how right it is and you've forgotten it, and about the importance of boredom in creativity.
Yep.
And it just hit me viscerally. Like I just remembered what it was like to be a kid. And like all those times you're trying just to find something to do. And I thought, my God, I don't know the last time I was like, I got to find something to do. You know, it's like, yeah, it's just very difficult. But do you find that like your creativity, is it big on the road, or do you need to be off the road, chilled out, relaxed, riding the bike
for
the song ideas to come in? Like, how does it work? Does it just happen when it happens?
I mean, it happens when it happens, but I'm also pretty conscious and thoughtful about making sure that I'm inputting on the road as well as outputting.
Oh, okay.
As you all know, as performers, mm-hmm. you spend a lot of time outputting on the road. Mm-hmm. You know, it's drive and drive and drive, set up, sound check, show, merch table, repeat.
Right.
And that's all output, really, when you think about it from an energy standpoint. And so it's nice along the way to spend time inputting. So that, for me, that means going and visiting really unique places. And I spend a lot of time looking at the Atlas Obscura. Are you hip to that?
No.
Oh man, the Atlas Obscura is a wonderful online resource for finding really unique kind of roadside-y places. And those might include people's personal vacuum museums or micronations where they have their own currency that you can exchange for, which nice. Is cookie dough.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really interesting outsider arty sort of places, mm-hmm. architectural monuments,
mm-hmm.
weird stuff, even like natural formations, singing rocks and so on like that. Mm. And I just make time to stop and visit those places when I'm on the road and write music around them because there's just so many good stories. Mm-hmm. And you can go be in that physical space, which is one of the great treats of being a musician, is that we get to go
right.
be present and bear witness to so many amazing places in the world from a really unique place, the stage.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, sitting up on a stage, you get a really unique idea of a pulse of a community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they don't know it, but they're really telling you a lot about themselves when they come to the show. And so I enjoy going and being present in those places. There's a song that I wrote called Pieces of You that actually began at an Atlas Obscura location in South Austin, a place called the Cathedral of Junk, which is a man's backyard mm-hmm. in kind of a quiet suburb where he collects what we would call trash and has assembled it into a gigantic structure that has multiple levels, and it's made of, you know, assembled of crutches and bicycle wheels and old trophies and, you know, vending machines and all sorts of stuff. And he's got it painted in this kind of crazy color pattern and everything. And so I just thought it was the coolest spot. And I went around and started looking at things and finding them and just kind of putting them into the song, like gathering up like right. a collage almost. And started writing, and that's where I got the first verse of that song, which is, you know, I wish I could keep every piece of you, all the lies and the truths, all the trophies from your youth, and the phone you used to call me on. All those things were there in that pile. And, you know, I wasn't there for maybe 8 minutes.
Right.
Because I had to go get for a show, but it was still really cool. Yeah.
I had a whole different idea about that song. I was listening to it this week, and I was like, oh, my God, this is the saddest song I've ever heard.
It is very sad. It took a turn towards sadness.
Yeah, it did.
When I finally went to finish it.
Yeah.
And part of that's because there's a visual artist in Lexington, Kentucky named Louis Zoeller Bickett, who worked on one piece of artwork for the last 40 years of his life called The Archive.
Hmm.
And that archive was really just a collection of objects, things that he had found or encountered in his life. So things like jars of dirt and water from places he'd visited, old teddy bears from past lovers, expired prescriptions, trash from Beverly Hills, all of these things carefully, you know, cataloged, labeled, and displayed in his home. And it can be super overwhelming to walk in, but once you start looking at all the little labels and realizing each of those is a story, so if you pull on the thread, there's a story there. And that's what gave all those objects value, not necessarily who made them or, you know, what they're made of.
Right.
And so when he passed away in the fall of 2017, but he suffered from Lou Gehrig's disease leading up to that, so his... you know, his passing was foreseeable for a while. And so I was thinking about him and the archive and all of these objects, and that verse came back to mind of all of these things. And so then I started looking through his archive, and that's where some of the other objects and stories came from. So that's where you start hearing about the first Christmas lights and the silver comb and the wine bottle with writing on it.
Yes.
And, you know, the keys and the lost thing. And he was, you know, very passionate dude, amazing visual artist, an infamous lover, you know. So he, a lot of people loved him and a lot of people knew him. And so when he passed away, his partner got in touch and asked for that song to be kind of the song that was at his service.
Wow.
So that was really special to me.
Yeah.
Little things like that. But all that stuff comes from taking time to input on the road.
Yeah. Right.
Taking time to make sure that you find something inspiring. Hmm. Script it. Make time for it on the calendar. Which it's is everywhere. Not easy to do.
Right.
It's not easy to do. But I think that also stems from what we talked about earlier in the conversation, which is my general compulsive need to create and collaborate. I feel like I've just got to do it. I've got to do it.
We're glad.
Yeah, thank you. A lot of people benefit from your music. You know, people have been so excited that you're coming. You know, they all kind of come out of the woodwork, and you don't know that what big fans they are of yours because you just hang. But yeah, so people are very excited. You make a huge difference.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I start a new job on Monday at a marketing agency. So I'm really literally taking the road game and making it my side hustle.
Wow.
Yeah, so, but I'm telling people this as I travel around. Like, I was in Nashville yesterday, saw a lot of friends, and I'm like, yep, start my new job on Monday. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, I start a new job at this marketing agency. I'm their lead storyteller. And they're like, cool. Cool. So, but you're still going to tour, right? I'm like, nope. I'm gonna play shows for sure. I'll get
right.
But I'm not gonna tour.
Wow.
And they're like, but what about the music? I'm like, listen, the music's gonna keep coming. I don't need to go play.
Come to you.
I don't need to go play at a huge festival. I don't need whatever. I wanna focus my energy on my community now.
Yeah.
Do you mean this Monday, like day after
as in day after
tomorrow? Is this your last touring gig before the day job?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
I've been on the road since I was 17.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm 34 now.
Okay.
It's been constant. So I don't keep the numbers on how many gigs I play a year, but you know, it's always somewhere between 200 and 300.
Really? You're doing that many?
Plus I usually score, the last 3 years I've scored 3 to 4 films a year.
Right.
Documentaries. So I'm making more music than I've ever made in my life.
Yeah.
And I will continue to make a lot of music. It's just not in the strict format of record, release, tour.
Right.
And I think that format is a challenging format to maintain these days because it's not how people are consuming music.
Mm-hmm.
And because people aren't consuming music that way, maybe more people are listening to music than ever, but they're paying less for it than ever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that means if you can't make it off of the recording, you got to make it off the show.
Yes.
And everybody's out there, which is an exciting time for live music.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that the ticket prices are staying low.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm just kind of like, man, I kind of like what you were talking about. I've been doing this for it's ironic to hear a 34-year-old musician say I've been doing this for a long time, but I have, you know, it's been 15 years pretty much on the road, solid.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll walk into a venue and, you know, the sound guy be like, well, Junior, what are we going to do today? And I'm like, well, I've been touring longer than you have. And this venue's existed, actually.
Right.
So, sir, I will need one DI and one microphone. Thank you very much. I would like a hyper, you know, cardioid condenser for the cello so that we don't have a lot of bleed from the drums. Oh, okay, okay. You know, it's an interesting vibe to have gone from the young gun, mm-hmm. which is what I was on the radio show and moving forward, yeah. to now being the fellow who's mentoring younger artists, mm-hmm. and helping them produce and figure out their path through the music, yeah. industry. And I think that that's going to be a little bit of my role, because before I got started in this path, there was very few. Now, there weren't really any singing cellists.
Right. I can't think mm-hmm. of any.
No, I mean, certainly there wasn't a clear path to the music industry for one. Mm-hmm. And if I've provided anything along the way, talking about people coming out of the woodwork, it's that now there is a little bit of a swath and, you know, something cut through the jungle of the music industry where people that are young and passionate and play weird instruments, whether they're cello or viola or kora, whatever it might be, then they've got this kind of storytelling music, you know, instrumental kind of path that exists as something that people can point to and be like, oh yeah, I want to do something like that. Hopefully it works for them.
Right on.
But I trade them all just to have you here by my side. Hear you laugh one more time. Feel your hand holding mine. See that hungry look in your eyes. I would hide your keys so you couldn't drive. Then you'd still be here. Some people just see a pile of junk. They don't know that it's pieces, pieces of you. Pieces of you.
All right, so you are listening to the Martha Bassett Show podcast here. That was the conversation we had with Ben Solee. So much fun for us, super insightful, just a very soulful and intelligent, thoughtful person, along with, as you've heard on the last podcast, and this, just a great musician. So what did you think? What were your takeaways?
My mind is blown all over again, just listening to that conversation again. I mean, the surprise announcement about starting the day job.
There is an irony, like you were the last gig before you started.
I know.
The day job.
I'm honored and heartbroken at the same time.
The Ben, whole time I kept thinking, poor fella, I hope he's just not phoning it in. Is it like the last day of high school? Where you're just like, God, I gotta go to school one more day. I hope we weren't too painful.
Well, if we were, he was so sweet to us. Ben, if you're listening, we hope that the new job is going well, and we thank you so much for gracing our stage with your beautiful artistry. And I know you're not done making music, so... I'm not going to grieve too much, but
no.
I'm...
We'll just hear them other ways. You're always welcome in Elkin for your one-off concert, and we'll get you a
absolutely,
good show.
Absolutely.
Who do we have on the next show coming up, if anybody's around town? Coming up in a couple weeks, October 6th.
Sam Baker, all the way from Texas. And this is really special. I don't know that Sam has played in our area, or certainly not recently and not very often.
Yeah, not much. It's a real honor to have him come up this way. And
Sam's
yeah.
got an amazing backstory, and his music, the songs are individually masterpieces. I haven't found one yet that I didn't love. Little vignettes of beauty.
Just perfection in the songwriting. So clearly we're big fans, and we've convinced him to come to our show. Thank you to Jim White, who gave a call out to him.
Yeah, Jim White hooked us up with him.
That and said,
so thank you, Jim.
Jim said we were worth the drive, so that means the world. So, Sarah, Kate Morgan is on, the 2012 Mountain Dulcimer champion. She's a spectacular singer also.
I love her voice. And, you know, when you say somebody is a champion of an instrument, it automatically makes you think Hot Licks. And yeah, she's got that, but she's got a really soulful, funky, groovy way of playing the dulcimer that I have just never heard before.
No, she just moves you to the core.
She's really special. Another Kentucky artist like Ben Salee, and he has a lot of that.
Yeah, he has a lot of the similar things.
Same elements.
And she's gonna. Our friend Ben Singer is coming over from Greensboro to play a few songs for us, and he writes very witty and wry and dark songs all at the same time.
We love Ben Singer.
We love Ben Singer, and you will love his songs, and he's gonna play with the band a little bit. Yep.
Thank you for listening, and please tell your friends. We need more listeners, and if you're one of my friends or family from West Virginia, please tell all my other friends and family to listen up, please. It costs nothing to listen.
This is the third take we've done for this section of the podcast. Every single take, she has managed to shoehorn in her family at the end.
Well, I've become aware that I have a lot of siblings for one thing, and not all of them like listen to podcasts, and they're all younger than me, so there's just no reason.
Tell them to get on board.
Get on board.
Get on
Come
board,
on,
people.
Well, it's a long, hard road to a rough edge land to the song.
That's our show for today, folks. Thanks to all the musicians for sharing your music. This show was produced by Pat Lawrence with assistance from the Reeves Theater. Our background music today was provided by Russell Kelly.
And as always, a special thanks to our home, the historic Reeves Theater and Cafe in Elkin, North Carolina, a home for music in the heart of the foothills. You can follow the entire Reeves Theater calendar at ReevesTheater.com and also on Facebook. He did a couple of the sex scenes in Boogie Nights. He scored the music for that. Dirty Banjo. Yeah, she likes the dirty banjo.
All banjo is dirty banjo.